Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. Episode 48 of Season 2 as the Steelers get ready to take on the Kansas City Chiefs in Arrowhead Stadium on Sunday night. It's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, and I'm David Todd from TheHammerSpeaks.com. Dave, I didn't get a chance to talk to you Wednesday, but happy Thanksgiving. Hope you enjoyed yourself, got some turkey, and I hope not too many people got in your way.
Not at all. You know me. I don't let people get in my way because I don't go where the people are. But, yeah, happy Thanksgiving to you, all of our listeners. Sounds like you're down in Georgia, a place I stomped around a little bit recently. Hope you're enjoying it out there.
15 people, all family in one house. You know what comes with that.
Yeah, booze and Xanax.
I got the booze. At least I got that.
I hear you. No, everything was great. Was able to get some eating done yesterday and watch a whole hell of a lot of football. And unfortunately, a few things didn't go the Steelers' way, but there was a few entertaining games and some few entertaining situations for us to talk about, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Let's get let's first go into the Wednesday and Thursday practice reports. We've got a little bit of news. We'll just go through the injury stuff before we go through the holiday games, and then we'll get into the previewing the Steeler news and the game. So just update our listeners and me, actually, because I haven't seen anything from today on what the latest is injury-wise.
Yeah, you know, James Harrison ended up being added to the injury report on Friday with his back flared up is what I'm hearing mostly right now. It's not a concern from what I understand. You know, these guys are coming off the bye week, getting back to some heavy hitting and all like that. He was limited today and listed as probable for the game Sunday night. I don't see him missing this game. Stevenson Sylvester, though, he was added to the injury report on Thursday with a calf problem, and he did not practice today for a second straight day. He's listed as questionable. I would probably bet now, you know, having missed 2 days that he's going to be down Sunday night. Lamar Woodley's been limited all week. I've been on my soapbox this whole time thinking that he should sit out another game, and it looks almost certain that he's not going to go Sunday night against the Chiefs. So look for Jason Worlds to make his third straight start at left outside linebacker there. Arnez Battle seemed like he might have had a little bit of setback today too. He had practiced fully on Thursday as he battles back from that hamstring injury, but he was only limited today. I would think that he's probably going to be a game time decision. If he's not 100%, there's no way they put him on the field either. Ben Roethlisberger, Troy Polamalu both practice fully. Ben, of course, with that thumb. Polamalu with the ribs. Reports I've heard is Roethlisberger's looked pretty good despite having to wear that splint and glove and all like that. Both those guys are going to play. And I think the most shocking, I wouldn't say it's really, really shocking, but I kind of thought that Emmanuel Sanders, I didn't like his chances, as early as last week, you know, talking to Scott Brown and how he was still limping around following that minor knee surgery. But all signs are looking like Emmanuel Sanders is going to suit up and play, according to Bruce Arians yesterday in his interview, saying he would definitely play. Sanders has practiced fully all week with no setbacks. So that's a look at your injury report. I think the biggest question marks really, I would say Stevenson Sylvester will be down. Lamar Woodley will be down. I kind of expect Arnez Battle to be down as well.
Interesting. Then we'll see who gets helmets. But with Sanders back, those two will probably flip, just Battle and Sanders, and then we'll see how the rest of it goes. Dave, we'll come back to the Steelers when we preview the Chiefs here, and we'll get into our picks. But yesterday we had three games, and let's take them one at a time. I think a lot of people were excited to watch it's always fun to watch Green Bay, even if you're not a Green Bay fan. Aaron Rodgers, I think, you know, we can say through 11 weeks, Aaron Rodgers has clinched the MVP. I'd be shocked if at this point it wasn't a unanimous decision, and that offense is awfully good. The thought was that Detroit can put up some points. They have a reasonably tough defense. They usually play well on Thanksgiving. They're at home. They had blown out the Bears at home on a Monday night game early in the season. The line, the late money, really came in hard on Detroit, and the line went from 6 or 6.5, wherever you saw it during the week, to actually down to 4 at kickoff. And I kind of thought that really made good value there for the Packers. Turned out it did, but clearly the thing that has everybody talking is the actions of Ndamukong Suh and his basically slamming the guy's head on the ground a few times and then stomping, and then his crazy comments afterward. What was your take on that?
You know, they want to paint James Harrison as the bad boy and all like that. But
well, that's over now.
You know, that's definitely over. You have what James Harrison has done to hits and all like that. James Harrison has been fined for hitting people, okay? Nothing egregious and you know, some of the things that like we've seen now with Sue, and this kind of takes you back to the Haynesworth thing, stomping on Andre Girard's head, you know, a few years back and all like that. Sue is out of control, man, and I tell you what shocked me more than anything was his comments afterward, almost trying to deny it. You go back and watch that play over and over again, and even the guys on Sirius really weren't jumping all over him last night when I was listening to that broadcast late last night. There is no doubt that this guy's got some issues, and not only will he be fined heavily for the actions yesterday in that game, he was ejected, of course. I think he might see a 2-game suspension out of this.
I definitely think he gets suspended. If you look back, that we've seen in the past, I mean, the Haynesworth situation when he stomped on Girard when his head was off, a helmet was off, he tried to take his head off. He got a 5-game suspension. I don't think we'll see that. But regardless of the fact that Sue went and met with Commissioner Goodell earlier in the season to talk about some of his actions, I don't think that's going to create any leniency. The reason he had the meeting in the first place is because he had already been thrown out of the game once. I think this year he's had a bunch of personal foul calls against him. I agree with you. I think it's at least 1, could be up to 3 or 4. 2 seems like a judicious number in terms of a suspension, but this guy is clearly now, in a recent poll, he was listed by players as dirtiest player in the league, and James Harrison was obviously high on that list. But I don't think James Harrison has never done anything like Ndamukong Suh did on Sunday. They're not in the same world. Hitting a guy really hard is a lot different than smashing a guy's head on the ground and stomping him.
Right, I agree, and you know what? You know, Detroit is on the fringe too. I mean, let's face it; they're not going to win that division. There's absolutely no way. In fact, the Packers can clinch if a few things go right on Sunday. I think they'll be the first team to clinch. So the Lions are right there on the cusp of a wild card bid. And now imagine having to go through your next 2, maybe 3 games, or even longer, without arguably your best defensive players. You know, especially on the defensive line. This is you've got to be really, really angry if you're in the front office of the Lions right now. And this kid needs to be sat down and talked to. And, I mean, let's face it, he could cost them a playoff berth this year.
No question. And we can get into that a little more as we look at the NFC standings. We saw what happened yesterday. Dallas snuck by again. You know, I keep thinking they're a team that's going to make the leap. And, look, at the end of the day, winning is winning, and I'm a big proponent. The Dolphins have been playing really good football, and their defense was really good yesterday. So regardless of the fact Dallas didn't cover, which pissed both of us off,
right,
they got the win if you're a Cowboy fan. But in that conference now, we're really seeing a bunch of teams start to bunch up around the kind of 7-4, 6-5 record. We got the Bears, who lost their quarterback, Cutler, you know, at least probably for the next 5 or 6 weeks. And so they've got to go to Oakland. That's going to be a tough game. Detroit 7-4. The Giants are at the Saints on Monday night. So if they lose that, they go to 6-5. And Atlanta, you know, if they win, they're 7-4, and nobody's coming out of the West. So the reality is Detroit is still in the driver's seat. But as you said, if his losing that, there's no shame in losing to Green Bay. Everybody's lost to Green Bay. But as you said, if him not playing means, you know, they lose a game in the next couple of weeks by 3 points or something like that, exactly what you said, it may cost them a playoff berth.
Yeah, you know, the Lions, I guess, you know, now sit, I think, 6th seed, you know, based on things that have happened heading into this weekend and all. You've got the Bears still in there, as you mentioned. So, you know, the odds are maybe one of the wild card teams is going to be the Lions or the Bears. But, you, I mean, even with the Bears' injury to Cutler and all, they've got a good defense as well, you know, going forward here. Let's not write off the Saints and the Falcons either. You know, one of those guys, one of those teams is going to win the division. The other probably likely will end up getting a wild card in there. So, boy, Sue really, really did hurt his team yesterday. And I'll admit, you know, I thought the Lions would play better yesterday, especially against the Packers defense that's been primed to giving up the big play and all like that. You've got to run and shoot with the Packers and beat them on the scoreboard. And once Stafford threw those INTs, you know, if their offense continues to play, you know, underperform like they did yesterday, and their defense is without Ndamukong Suh, boy, you've really got to be upset today on Black Friday as a Lions fan.
Yep, and I'll just throw in that they put Javid Best on the injured reserve today. Kevin Smith was out with a high ankle sprain, and he had come back and was doing good things. And as we saw, look, there's no question the Lions were the better team in the first half. They went in down 7-0. But I think they had outgained them roughly 200 yards to 88 or something. But, you know, you pointed it out. It was the turnover, the interception by Matthews, the great pick by Woodson. And, you know, Stafford's obviously struggled the last 3 weeks. I don't know how much of that you want to put on his throwing hand, the injury to his throwing hand, certainly some of it. That team now without a running back, without Ndamukong Suh, they're big question marks. And just don't write off the Philadelphia Eagles yet. 4-6. A big win last week against the Giants. They put a couple wins together and get Michael Vick back. You know, if they're sitting 6-6, they're in it.
Yeah, that division's I don't know what to think about that division. When you think one of the teams is trying to you know, muscle ahead like maybe Dallas or something like that, and then they kind of struggle against which arguably, I mean, the Miami does have a good defense, but I really thought Dallas was going to lay it to them yesterday. But yeah, you don't know who's going to come out of the East right now, and you know, the West is all but sewn up, even though the 49ers didn't do us any favors and lost to Baltimore last night, and the South's going to be an interesting race too. So yeah, the NFC is still wide open except for a couple spots.
Yeah, so we saw Dallas. We saw Dallas come back and win that game at the end. Romo threw a couple tough picks in the first half, but I still think he's a good quarterback. I think he's in that group of quarterbacks with Eli Manning. I don't know if Joe Flacco's in that group, but you know, he's not in the top group, but just below that. And I'm not a Cowboy fan, but the kid from Oklahoma's been running the ball really well, and you know, they've got some talent with Dez Bryant at wide receiver and Witten at tight end. So, you know, one of these days I expect them to put it all together and put 42 points up on the board. We'll see what happens. But so they squeaked out a win against Miami, and anybody playing Miami the last 5 weeks of the season should certainly keep their head up. Matt Moore is a capable quarterback. You know, they've done better things with Marshall and Bush now, and their defense is really good. Their corners really impressed me. So that was a good win. And then let's talk about this Ravens-Niners game. I didn't get to see much of the first half. I got to see the second half. But what was your take from that game?
From the 49ers-Ravens game, I tell you, me and Nick talked about this the other day on Wednesday, and we both kind of thought that the Ravens would win this by a solid touchdown or more. And, you know, Alex Smith, they just could not keep the pressure off Alex Smith, especially in the interior line. The Ravens just kept blitzing and doing just simple stunts. The line just really did not play up to standards whatsoever. Alex Smith looked like basically the old Alex Smith, was not getting the ball out and was not making good decisions to throw the ball away, taking the sacks and all like that. They only converted, I think, two of 12 third downs.
Two of 12.
And on the flip side, the Ravens were converting their third downs. Although Joe Flacco did not have a fantastic day statistically, he did not turn the ball over, and he was not sacked in that game. I thought there was two big plays in the game, of course, was the pass interference, on the 49ers deep in their own end, that the 49ers at least were able to hold the Ravens to a field goal on that drive. Then, of course, the other play was the the kind of the chop block and all, which really was a questionable call when you go back and look at it. I understand the rule. I understand what they're trying to do there, but I think that was more of a guy just trying not to fall over and, you know, instead of egregiously push a guy over the running back who was blocking him there. And
yeah, Dave, let me ask you a question on that, because I didn't have sound where I was watching. If the offensive guard had not turned and engaged or re-engaged, is the back allowed to block him low if he's alone?
Oh, if he's alone, yeah. Yeah, you know, in the backfield, you know, because we see all the time the blitz pick up of blocking guys low and all like that. The thing that they were trying to say is that the guy was still engaged with another player there, and it was a very questionable call. It negated the long touchdown. The only big play, really, I think the 49ers only had one explosive play in that game. Both sides were not able to have explosive plays. Now, I thought both defenses played well. Patrick Willis, of course, for the 49ers, I thought played well. The Ravens were without Ray Lewis and did not miss a beat without him. Of course, Terrell Suggs was all over the place in that game. The 49ers receivers could not get open. They were not able to get the ball to Vernon Davis on a consistent basis. And let's face it, you just can't let your quarterback get sacked nine times in a game and expect to win many ball games there. So, yeah, it was a close game. If you just looked at the scoreboard and didn't watch the game, you say, oh, 16-6, I bet that was a pretty good game. It really wasn't. It was pretty much all Baltimore the whole way.
Yeah, Justin Smith's a really good player for San Francisco, flies under the radar, as does Navarro Bowman. You hit it right. Both defenses were really good. Neither team could really run the ball effectively. Both teams averaging, actually the Niners averaged 3.5 yards a carry. The Ravens only 2.6 yards a carry. It wasn't that entertaining a game, but it was good defense. And, you know, it's a good win for the Ravens. I certainly am not going to give the Ravens the division title because they won that game. They've shown that they're an erratic team. They've got to go to San Diego. And as bad as San Diego's been, having lost five straight, I think when Baltimore goes to San Diego, that line's going to be awfully close to pick, and there's a reason for that. So we'll see what happens. But certainly, you know, if you're a Ravens fan, you had another feather in the cap. You won against a team with a good record. You beat them at home on national television. So, you know, good for them. It makes the race all that much more interesting.
Let's ask this now. You said you only got to see about half of the game, though, but knowing what you know about from the game, how do you think the 49ers are that much of a threat to the Steelers right now?
No, 49ers don't scare me. I think they're a good defensive team, but I really, you know that I've said that I think the Steeler offense, certainly when they get Manny Sanders back, is really has the potential to kind of go out and be a Green Bay-type offense, go out and score 30 points every week. I think they're close to that. Interesting, we'll get into the Ligurski move at left guard, but, you know, they certainly have to get the run game going a little bit, and you want to every week be able to be somewhat effective running the ball. But no, San Francisco doesn't scare me. I imagine for that game when we go out there, assuming everybody's healthy, that line will be around pick as well when we get to San Francisco. But as you pointed out, Alex Smith is not quite at that level to be a dominant guy. Vernon Davis, a skilled guy. Crabtree, a really good receiver, but not a burner. And Frank Gore, a good running back. So if they can, you know, they're going to win games just the way the Ravens won that game last night. Possess the ball. Be able to grind out first downs on the ground, be opportunistic, and get some turnovers. And, you know, the one turnover went the other way on the pick by the Ravens. But, they don't really scare me. I will tell you the thing that I took away from the game, and anybody who's watched the Ravens play the past couple of weeks, is that Torrey Smith is getting better. He's getting better fast. And if he can hold on to the ball, he is going to be a dangerous guy. And you know, we all know that Flacco has the arm to make all the throws. It's just, does he actually make the throws? And he was inaccurate at times last night, but, you know, that's my takeaway from the game, is that Torrey Smith is pretty good.
Yeah, and, you know, you mentioned the Ravens' rest of their schedule. They've got the Cleveland Browns twice, which the first of which they play a week from Sunday. They've got the Colts, which should be a very easy win for them. They've got the Chargers, as you mentioned, and they close the season with the Bengals. So, you know, if we can get some help from the Chargers, we've talked about the Steelers can run the table or go 5-1 over the last six games, that Ravens-Bengals game really could be a huge matchup last week of the season.
Yeah, it's, but you know, it's interesting, and just the reality is for Steeler fans, just looking at scenarios, there is a possibility the Steelers finish 13-3 and are the wild card team.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. And, you know, you've got to like their chances at a wild card. When you look at the standings overall right now, especially going into this weekend, if they take care of Kansas City like they should, regardless of what happens with the Jets and Bills game this week, one of those teams is going to have six losses. The Titans, you know, they play Tampa Bay, a team that we don't really haven't got a good handle on what they are or aren't. And Matt Hasselbeck's banged up, so that's definitely a game the Titans could lose. Denver. Who knows what's going to happen with Tebow going forward there. And, you know, the Chargers already have six losses too. So if a couple teams get some losses this week and the Steelers get a win, it would almost take a total collapse for the Steelers not to at least make a wild card.
Yep. All right, Dave, well, let's get into the Steeler news. Since you did the podcast on Wednesday and since we've spoken, I think the most interesting news is obviously the Steelers have made another promotion demotion, made a change in their starting lineup. And it's funny because you brought it up on Monday and we talked about it and talked about what we do. And we were talking about the left guard position, the right guard position. Would Doug Ligursky, should he be given a starting spot? And I think we both came to the conclusion that Ligursky is a valuable guy, mostly because he's your backup center. And if he's starting at guard, obviously if he gets hurt, you're a little hamstrung as to a backup center if Pouncey were to go down. Now, I don't think that's the best reason to make decisions. I think you want to put your best five guys on the line and hope they get through the games. So in that respect, I understand the Steelers' decision, but we saw Mark Cabale tweet on Wednesday. He said, you know, how can Arians the offensive line coach, whose name escaped?
Sean Coogler.
Yeah, how can Coogler or Tomlin say that they made the decision because Ligursky's played better when Ligursky basically hasn't played in 4 weeks and Kimo, you know, has been out there? So, you know, I asked him, you know, could that be practice and could it be particularly practice in a bye week where you get some more activity and maybe get more reps and there's a little bit of live action going on? And he pretty much dismissed that. So I wonder if it's the decision was made because Kimo's not playing up to the standard. He's not above the line, and they went to the next guy who they expect to be above the line.
Well, let me say first off that, yeah, when we talked about this earlier this week and last week when I talked to Scott Brown, I thought that the best move overall was just to keep the continuity involved, not that Kimo Otto's played all that fantastic. I think he's been fine as far on the counterpike plays and all when he's pulling to the right and all like that. That's been his bread and butter. If you ask me, his pass protection, though, has been spotty. I mean, he had a good game against the Ravens, but we've seen other games this year where Kimo Otto likes to give up that inside pressure. Excuse me. Some of that turkey still coming back on me. But, okay, it's not – the move is not surprising. Now, is it a total upgrade? I'm not convinced that it is. I think Ligursky is better on the left side at the left guard spot than he is the right guard spot. He is the smarter of the two. I think that was kind of reinforced by Bruce Arians a little bit in his talk yesterday. And, you know, there might be a little bit of the health reasons in there as well, too. But I think, you know, they're looking at it that Ligursky's probably not going to make the stupid mistakes. He's going to allow a couple of pressures during the game. He's not going to make the mental mistakes and get the penalties that, say, a Ligursky does for diving in and spearing on the pile or anything like that. I'm not convinced that this is the last change that you have there, though, because, like I said, I don't think Ligursky is a huge upgrade over Kimo Otto. Ligursky can still pull. He's got probably the best short area quickness of any offensive lineman that the Steelers have. We've seen him pull off that counterpike play I think the most memorable this year was the long run by Jonathan Dwyer earlier in the year. I believe Ligursky was at left guard for that game. So, you know, we'll get a good look at him this week, and I'll break him down like I do every, you know, like the lineman every other week. It's not a totally surprising move, like I said. I just think that, you know, I think they should have kept it the same for continuity reasons.
Yep. I can't argue with you. And we don't necessarily see what happens in practice every day, but it'll be interesting to see. We've seen a lot of both guys. I don't I don't think the difference in both guys is all that significant. So as you said, hopefully you get one less 15-yard penalty a game, which Kemo seemed to be getting, and we go from there. Dave, let's just touch on some of the things on this Niners game. I know you went over it with the beat writer in Kansas City on Wednesday, but a couple things is obviously the signing, the claiming of Kyle Orton off waivers. Three teams put a claim in. Interestingly enough, the Bears did not, even though Cutler is hurt. Three teams put a claim in. He was awarded to Kansas City. I guess the feeling is Tyler Pacheco's going to definitely get the start, but if this game gets out of hand or Kansas City's down 17-0 in the second quarter, they may say, look, let's just move this forward, because we all kind of expect that Orton will be the starter in a week or 2 weeks at the outside. And if they're getting smoked early on, we may see him even in the first half.
Yeah, in fact, Josh Looney, who I had on, posted a good article on KCChiefs.com after we had him on. I think it might have been yesterday that he put it up. Orton had not reported as of yesterday. Today is the day that he's reporting. Supposedly had some family issues to tie together. So today actually will be Orton's first day with the Chiefs. So you've got Friday, Saturday, and then the game Sunday. That's just not enough time to prepare to be a starter. Now, of course, Palka will start this game, but you don't know. I mean, you could get in a situation where they just hopefully the Steelers are blowing them out, and then Orton gets in the game to give him a spark. He does have some familiarity with the type of offense that Todd Haley runs. I'm sure a lot of the stuff they do, maybe some of the terminology will be a little bit different. So it would not be totally shocking to see Orton play in this game. And in fact, that probably means things are going fantastic for the Steelers if he is. The big thing heading into this game with the Steelers is to look back at the game in 2009. The Steelers on the road, same situation, heavily favored in the game. And, things got away from you. You get some turnovers mixed in there. You get some bad play calling, some bad execution, and you don't put a team away and let them hang around. Then your quarterback goes out with a concussion, and bam, you turn around, you're in overtime against a team that has nothing to lose. And that's what happened last time. And I think as long as the Steelers do not turn the ball over, they force a couple turnovers, something that we have not seen a lot of this year, which we really need to get that on track here coming pretty, starting with this game. Just play within inside yourself and let your talent deem what happens in this game. And this is a game the Steelers can win.
I think the interesting thing also, just in terms of personnel, is everybody's now going to pay a lot of attention to how many snaps Hines Ward's on the field for. With Sanders coming back, look, I think it's possible that you're going to see the same type of thing. Hines Ward's going to get 10 to 15 snaps. If they go three wides, it looks like Kosher would be the guy. I expect Manny Sanders, if he dresses, to play. I don't expect him to be on the sideline and 80 snaps, get five snaps. I think he'll get 15 or 20 snaps. And that may mean if they go four wide, Hines Ward in certain situations may not be on the field. And if that's the case, then the writing is clearly on the wall. But that's probably the most interesting side note to this game coming up Sunday night.
Yeah, definitely his snap count as far as offensive side of the ball, Sanders' snap count on the offensive side of the ball. We talked about the Ligurski thing that we're going to monitor closely this week. And, of course, Ben's thumb would be the other thing. But, yeah, I think you could see where, let's face it, and we talked about this, Hines is still, as long as he's 100% healthy, he's still deadly on third downs and he's still deadly in the red zone. So, depending on, how the situation type football that Tomlin worked about talked about on Tuesday is them working on during the bye week and all, that will deem how much Hines Ward plays in this game, I think.
I'm with you. So, that'll be the interesting thing to see. I also think, the Kansas City's run defense isn't very good. It'll be interesting to see how much the Steelers come out and really try to pound the football and set that up, or if as we know, they're 60-40 pass-run ratio, and they've been very effective through the air, and Ben's been great, and the receivers seem to be as healthy as they've been all season. So, maybe they just come out and take it at them.
Well, when you look at them from a statistic standpoint, passing yards of play, They are ranked 29th in the league, allowing 7.78 yards a game. When I was talking to Josh Looney, he said, look for Heath Miller in the matchup that he might get in this game on a safety or even a linebacker for that matter. Rushing yards per play, they've allowed 4.21, which is good for 16th in the league. They are giving up a lot of rushing yards a game, primarily, I guess, from the standpoint, I don't think they're that bad per game and yards per play. I think they get behind a little bit in some of these games and all, but I don't think that and Josh and I talked about this overall too. You know, their game against the Patriots, if you just looked at the scoreboard and did not watch that game, you say, oh man, the Patriots just handed it to them. I thought that the Chiefs played pretty good in that game. The Chiefs actually had the ball, as Josh and I talked about, 7 or 8 times in Patriots territory. They just couldn't do anything with it, whether it be a interception or a penalty at a bad time or taking a sack at a key time. That's what killed them. I thought they ran the ball fairly well with that kind of that three-headed monster that they've got in, who is it, Thomas Jones, Jackie Battle, and McCluster over there. I think you're going to see, I tell you, Thomas Jones looked like he found the fountain of youth a little bit in that game. I expect them to lean heavily on the running game in this game, put Palco in real manageable situations, a lot of short passes and all. And, you know, what if you're the Steelers, you want to jump on them quickly. You know, you want to, I would, you know, even thumb and all, I think Ben's going to come out throwing in this game, and I think they want to jump on them 10-0, 14-0 right off the bat and get the Chiefs out of the game plan.
Yep, I'm with you. Anything else you want to throw out at the game on Sunday, Palco? Steeler receivers, offensive line, we've covered most of it. Anything else you're thinking about?
It's going to be interesting to see, you know, what they do with the big receivers of Baldwin and Dwayne Bowe. You know, I they've been running a lot more zone stuff lately, so I don't think you'll have Ike Taylor follow anyone in particular around in this game. Their tight ends are really not scary, being as how they lost who's that big tight end, Tony Mokiati or whatnot, who they lost early in the season. That was a big blow for them. Their other two tight ends are more run blocking type tight ends than anything. So I expect them to try to run the ball down the Steelers' throat in this game. Linebacker wise, I think this could be a good coming out, the best situation possible for Jason Worlds for a coming out party. For him this week. And at left guard this week, the Chiefs are going to be out without Ryan Lilja in this game, who was ruled out earlier in the week with a concussion that he suffered against the Patriots on Monday night. So you're going to have Rodney Hudson, the kid out of Florida State, who, you know, I got to admit, I had my eye on him back a little bit, you know, prior to the draft and all like that. But he'll be making a start at left guard this week. So, you know, James Harrison and Brett Kiesel, I expect a lot of stunts and all over on that side to try to get, try to get pressure on Palco through that point.
Yeah, free things up. It'll be interesting to see if Palco, anything that his short stint with the Steelers did anything in terms of him understanding their defense any better than the average QB might. You know, I root for Tyler Palco to succeed, but I won't be rooting for Tyler Palco on Sunday night.
Yeah, and this is a guy, and Tomlin hit it on head. This is a guy that I think smart upstairs in the head and all like that. Good football knowledge of the game. His arm strength. He just does not have the arm and can't make the throws, in my opinion. In fact, watching that game against the Patriots, I felt like a few years ago when he played for Pitt and all, I felt like I wanted to run up to the wall and separate my shoulder, because the way his throwing motion is, sometimes he's got that little hitch, and I feel like if I could do that, it would make me watching his throws a little bit more comfortable, you know. But, you know, you got to wish nothing. But, I mean, the guy is put in a situation that, the guy is a backup quarterback at best in this league, and more realistically, he's a third-string clipboard guy in the league going forward. And like you said, I wish nothing but the best for him. I think he's going to be in for a long day against the Steelers Sunday night.
Yeah, I'm with you. Well, Dave, let's get a Thanksgiving edition here, and I'm a little tight on time, so let's get right to the games. I know we were both on the wrong side of the Dallas game yesterday. I was fortunate enough to be on the right side of the other two. So a little 2-1 coming into what's going on Sunday. We're leading off with Arizona at St. Louis. This line finally got posted. I haven't seen, actually, who's playing quarterback, but I would assume that, Cobb is still out. I don't know if you've seen it, but why don't you lead us off on this one? It's such a juicy one.
Because it's such a juicy one indeed. Last I have heard, he's still questionable for second week with the toe for Cobb. So Vegas knows enough about this that I think the line opened up at with the Rams -3. I'm staying away from this game altogether, but gun to my head, give me the Rams at home and lay, I think it's 2.5 now you can get, so I'm going to lay 2.5.
Yeah, I'm going to lay 2.5 too, Dave. I exactly the same. I won't waste people's time with anything else. The Jets are home against the Bills. This line is 9.5. Buffalo's, they've imploded. I think sometimes we forget how much injuries play an impact when things like this happen. They have not been good. I mean, I watched them play Miami last week in Miami, and I do think Miami's gotten a lot better, and they have a good defense. But, boy, Buffalo was awful. Since Ryan Fitzpatrick signed that, whatever it was, $50, $60 million contract, he has made bad decisions with the football, which is what he is not known to do. They put Fred Jackson on the injured reserve this week, so he's done for the season. This team is clearly in disarray. The Jets coming off 10 days where I imagine they are just champing at the bit more than any team in football after getting beat by Tebow in Denver on national TV, a bad Thursday night loss for them. 9.5 is not the perfect number for me because I don't think the Jets are probably 9.5 points better, but I think everything does set up for them to maybe blow them out and win this game kind of 27-10.
Yeah, I think this. If I could get 10 points, though, I would swing the other way on this, so I'm going to be watching this one up until game time. Right now, I think it's right at that point. If you can lay 9, lay the 9. If you can lay 9.5, maybe lay 9.5. I think 10 becomes the magic number there. But for all practical purposes right now with the current line, give me the Jets and lay the 9.5.
Cincinnati at Cleveland. I tweeted earlier today, Mike Silver writes for Yahoo Sports, and he's a guy who flies a little bit under the radar versus guys like Peter King and all the guys we see on ESPN and the NFL Network. But what's interesting about Mike Silver, I don't always agree with what he writes, but he has relationships with players, and he gets stories that other guys don't get. And Dave, I don't know if you saw the article. It was posted very early this morning, but it was an article on Colt McCoy in his first year in Cleveland.
I did read that.
It was really interesting stuff about how he was really browbeaten and more than that. Basically the term hazing was thrown around, and it was by the coaching staff. And the gist of it was, Colt McCoy got a lot of street cred in the locker room for how he handled it during the season, and it really cast the Cleveland offensive coordinator, who's now the offensive coordinator in Miami, in a bad light. It certainly didn't cast Eric Mangini in a favorable light. You think as professionals you'd be exactly the opposite. You want to teach guys. You want guys. You want to embrace them. You want to welcome them with open arms. And one of the things we constantly hear about the Steelers, and this is why they are the first-class organization they are, Hines Ward is teaching Antonio Brown and Emmanuel Sanders. James Harrison and Lamar Woodley are teaching Jason Worlds and Stevenson Sylvester and the young guys there. And we hear this from the young guys in the Steelers, Wesley Saunders. Every one of these guys talks about how they're mentored by the guys who have their position. We heard it about Aaron Smith. We heard it about Brett Kiesel when they're talking about Cam Hayward and Ziggy Hood. And I just can't say it enough. This is why the Steelers are such a class organization. That's why they're a winning organization. You read crap like this about what the Browns are doing, and you just go, that's why they stink.
Yeah, and in fact, I got a chuckle out of that article that the screaming in his helmet was so loud that they were telling him to take his helmet off because people couldn't hear an auto. Can you imagine what was coming through some of the language and all?
Right, can you imagine being in the huddle just going like, what the F is going on?
No, this violent screaming in your head at all times. But that is a great article. If any listeners, make sure you read Michael Silver's article on that. That being said, in this game, Cincinnati is playing, playing good ball this year with Andy Dalton. I think this line has held 7 the whole time. It's in Cincinnati. I think Cincinnati covers this no problem, late at 7.
Yeah, I'm less with you on the no problem cover. Everybody kind of dismisses Cleveland. They're 4-6. They've got a decent defense. They're not you know, look, Cincinnati should win this game. But if there's ever a time for Cincinnati to have a letdown after playing the Steelers and playing the Ravens, this would be it. Now, conversely, if they have a letdown in this game, they're pretty much done. They might be, you know, their playoff thoughts may go away. There's still a chance both wildcard teams could come out of the AFC North. We've talked about maybe all four teams coming out of the North in each division, in each conference, in the AFC and the NFC. This is a game the Bengals have to win. I'm not going to play at 7. I don't like the number, but I understand where you're coming from. Next one is a big game. This impacts the Steelers a little bit. The Texans are at the Jaguars. The Jaguars, we've seen them look good. We've seen them go up to Cleveland. They should have finished that game off last week on the one-yard line, didn't get it done. Texans are not going to have Matt Schaub at quarterback. We're going to see Matt Leinart make his season debut, or at least his season starting debut. The line's 6.5. I like the Texans. I know you're a fan of the Texans. Both of you and I think this is a really good football team. They've got good corners now. Even without Mario Williams, they're able to stop the run, and they're able to run the ball. Andre Johnson looks like he's going to be a go for the first time in about 6 weeks. But I really don't trust Matt Leinart, and I'm not going to lay 6.5, so I'm going to take a pass.
I think they can cover this, and I think they're going to keep it real simple for Leinart. I think they're going to lean on Foster. I mean, Jacksonville's defense is good. This is a road game. I admit that. I kind of envisioned this line to be a little bit lower, to be honest with you. But, you know, I definitely think this is a game Jacksonville can win. I see this, you got to remember who's on the other side of the offense, and I think this is a game that the Houston defense can get a defensive score in, maybe force a couple of turnovers, give Leinart a short field. For that reason, I'm going to take the Texans. I'm going to lay the 6.5.
All right. Next one we have up is Carolina at Indy. This is a game that nobody's really going to pay attention to, only to see if Indy can get one in the win column. This is one of the few chances they're going to have. They're at home. They're getting 3.5 against Carolina. Carolina, Cam Newton has cooled off a little bit, still having a hell of a good rookie season, probably going to be the offensive rookie of the year, unquestionably. You know, they've got players, D'Angelo Williams, Steve Smith, but, you know, they're still not a good team. But this is a team, if they have another good draft next year, they could get good fast, even though they play in a very tough division. Dave, I don't know what to say about this game. I guess I would lay the 3.5 with Carolina, but I think Indy's going to win one sooner or later. I don't see him going 0-16. You think this is the week?
I think this could be the week for them. I think, if you can get that 3.5, I would take Indianapolis plus the 3.5. I think this has a potential to be the one game that Indianapolis wins this year.
Okay. The next one is Tampa at Tennessee. This also a big game for both teams. They're both on the fringe of the playoff discussion. Tennessee's a 3.5-point favorite at home. We've seen Tampa all over the map this year. They've played good games. They've played bad games. They play some teams tough, and they roll over in other games. Tennessee, a little bit the same. 3.5, Tennessee at home. Again, another game that I don't really like much. I guess I'm going to have to think about this game more, but I'm kind of inclined to take the points, Dave. 3.5. If it were 2.5, I'd take the home team, but maybe 3.5, maybe I'd take Tampa.
Yeah, I'm kind of leaning with you on this too. I'd be interested to see which way the late money comes in this leading up to game time. Right now I'm leading to the plus 3.5. Hasselbeck, that arm's not right. Could be locker in this game quick. I just got a feeling that Tampa Bay can finally eke one out here. They need it. If either team loses this game, they're all but done in the playoff picture. I think Tampa Bay will come in there and into Tennessee and get it done. So right now, I want the 3.5 points.
Okay. Minnesota's at Atlanta. Atlanta's 9.5. Minnesota, boy, they got it, you know, embarrassing last week. The loss to Oakland at home when they were up early. They lost Adrian Peterson. He's not going to play this week. We've both said that the kid from Florida State playing quarterback, what's his name?
Ponder.
Yeah, Christian Ponder. He's okay. They probably have the guy that who's going to be their quarterback for the next 5 years. But, you know, this team isn't that good. They're not that good in the skilled positions at receiver and back without Adrian Peterson. Their defense is okay. The Falcons, you know, you keep betting on them. They killed me last week when they fumbled the ball on the 7-yard line, and I bitched about it already, and Tennessee went length of the field and scored a touchdown with Jake Locker. So I got no points, and they got 7. I ended up with a 6-point push on kind of my bet of the week. So I'm mad at them, but I'm not going to bet against them. I'd probably take them 9.5. I'd probably take them, but not in size.
Yeah, this is going to go to 10 easily by game time, I have a feeling. So right now, if you can lay the 9.5 right now, or even 9, some places you might be able to get that, do it. But, yeah, I've been at Falcons at home. They're a different team at home. They really, really need this game. I think they get it right now. I'm laying the 9.5.
4 o'clock games, Chicago at Oakland, probably, in my mind, the most interesting game on the board this week. I have been espousing the Raiders' cause. Carson Palmer now, you know, 3 or 4 weeks into it. Certainly the playbook should be coming a lot easier. They're able to run the ball. Michael Bush has been really good. McFadden is again ruled out. He's not going to play this week. He's probably still a couple weeks away. Chicago, for obvious reasons, huge question marks with the young kid at quarterback, Caleb Haney. Cutler has been great this year. Their offensive line has been better. They got a solid defense. This game, to me, it could go anywhere. No result would surprise me. And if that's the case, I would be inclined to take points if that's the case. But I'll probably take a pass. I've got Oakland laying 4. Where are you coming from on this one?
I just look at the quarterbacks in this one is the way I boil this down to. Carson Palmer's had a few weeks to get, acclimated with the offense and all like that. I think Bush has played very well in relief of McFadden. I know that the Bears have Forte, but I think the Oakland's going to force Heaney to try to throw the ball. I think Oakland going to have a pretty good time on defense, shutting them down through the air. So give me Oakland to lay the 4 points.
Okay, Washington at Seattle. This is a big who cares. Washington is getting 3.5 in Seattle. The Seahawks have been pretty good at home. They've got a good defense. You know, Tavares Jackson is he's not good, but he's occasionally hit or miss. Washington was much better against the Cowboys last week, but I just don't see him going across the country and making a big game of this. Again, a game I'm not going to play, but if it goes down to 3, I'll probably take the Seahawks. At 3.5, I'll probably pass.
Yeah, this game opened, I think, with the Seahawks by 6. It's already closed to 3.5. I'm with you. If this thing moves to 3, give me Seattle at home laying the 3 points if it gets that far. Otherwise, I'm not playing it.
Well, now I take back what I said about the Bears and the Raiders. It is a really interesting game, but the most interesting game on the board is New England at Philadelphia. And it looks like Mike Vick is going to be out again this week. So you got Vince Young, who, look, he threw a bunch of picks. I'm not a big fan of Vince Young as a quarterback, but he got it done when he had to. So give him a little bit of the Tebow stuff. And by the way, Vince Young has had that kind of reputation as a guy who wins games. And as bad as he was in Tennessee, his record was really good. A lot of comeback wins. He ended up getting that drive on Monday night and getting the win, or Sunday, whichever night it was, Sunday night, getting the win for the Eagles. So New England's laying 3.5 in Philly. Again, the Eagles season is on the line. The Patriots season is not on the line. I'll take the Patriots, Dave, but begrudgingly.
I've got it. I mean, I just cannot imagine. I can't imagine the Patriots losing this game. So that, you know, now the question is it a field goal game or do they, you know, get it by a touchdown or a couple of field goals? I just, even though the short week and all like that, I think New England has what it takes. Nnamdi Asamoah, you know, kind of banged his knee up the other day. Vince Young, I mean, outside of that one drive, I didn't think he looked good. Give me the Patriots late in 3.5.
And then we got a couple games left on the board. We got Denver at San Diego. San Diego's lost 5 in a row. Denver's getting 6 points. Denver's defense has been great. Phillip Rivers has just got to be feeling kind of, I mean, he's got to feel bad. He's got to be feeling, I don't know that he's feeling heat, but he's got to be a little bit embarrassed is how I would probably characterize it if I were to guess what his psychological state is. He's a competitor. I'm laying 6 here. The Chargers have done me wrong for years now. This might be a game for them to start paying me back.
Man, what is it about Tebow, man? People getting, kids getting tattoos of Tebow on their back. I saw a picture surface on Twitter. it's just crazy, man. That being said, I don't know which way to go. I mean, San Diego is at home. Boy, if they were to lose a 6 straight and to Tebow at that, I heads are got to roll. Phillip Rivers is a better quarterback than what he's played. I still don't think he's top 5, top 6 quarterback, but I think he's better than what he's played. If they they got to get Denver down in a hurry and make Tebow beat them with their arm, with his arm.
That's the key, Dave. That's the key. Get up 2 touchdowns and the game's over.
Right, because I just don't see the guy coming back. He can lead a 90-yard drive with his feet and go 2 of 7 or whatnot. That's fine. But to get – I think they're able to get them down for that reason alone. And I'm probably – Tebow's probably going to screw me here, but give me Chargers -6.
Yeah, although I say he can't do 14 and the game's over, and he was down 14 against Miami with 5 minutes left and won. So yep. I take it back.
Yeah, but you're not going to run out and get a tattoo on your back.
I'm not getting a tattoo on my back. I'd rather get a tattoo of the girl who gave me a massage this afternoon.
Oh, gotcha. Rub it in.
Ashley. I might just get her name on my arm. Sunday night game. We got the Steelers and the Chiefs. Lines 10.5. I would love to have been 10 or 9.5, but it isn't. It's been here for a while, and it's not going lower. I said it. Steelers should score 30 points. Chiefs aren't putting up more than, 13 with Tyler Pacheco, a quarterback. So, I'm laying the points. I'll just say 31 to 13 Steelers.
27-10 Steelers cover.
All right,
that's simple. And also, and that massage didn't happen unless you put post pictures of it. So
yeah, we always do the Steelers last, but there is a Monday night game. And it's a big game. The Giants at New Orleans. The Giants are getting 7. I'll take it. I'll take the 7 points with the Giants. They're a bit up and down, play to the level of their opponent, the Saints. The Saints are a good team, but the Saints, in my mind, are a lot Drew Brees. They can give up some points as well. So I'll take 7 there.
New Orleans at home, that place is going to be loud. Manning has not looked like himself. I know the Saints can give up the big plays. I think they've lost a little bit of confidence from the bettors over the last few weeks, and that's why the line it started off at 6.5 at the week, and now it's jumped up to 7. I still feel comfortable with that. Give me the Saints and lay the 7.
All right, okay, Dave. Well, anything to touch on before we close up? I know we got some questions. We've run a little bit long today, and I've got to run out of here, but we will get to some of those questions and comments. As always, we appreciate that stuff. We'll get to that stuff on Monday after we review the Chiefs game on Sunday. But anything you want to close with?
No, just, everybody enjoy the game. It's Sunday night, so we'll have the inactives up an hour and a half ahead of time on SteelersDepot.com. I'll have my 7 keys to the game up tomorrow afternoon, along with my inactive predictions, as well as whatever news passes along between now and then. And we appreciate everybody listening.
Dave, will you cast an eye at Pitt, West Virginia tonight?
I will. I will have it on. I think don't the Pens play tonight as well?
Pens play tonight at 7 o'clock against Otto as well. Go Sid. Go Pitt. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, most definitely. I'll have it all on tonight.
All right. Well, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Let's get a win Sunday night, and we'll be back at you on Monday.